Good morning, everyone. Just kind of giving a quick update. Liz and the baby are home. Both are doing well. If you want to know about me, probably not. I'm doing all right. I'm a bit sleep deprived, so if I misspeak, just understand I'm blaming it on that. Also this week, we lost one of our members here. Glenn passed away, and Mercy asked if I would say something about Liz, kind of just update you on it. He has been buried in West Virginia, but our heart goes out to their family. But I say that that's a man that, from what I know, is with the Father now. Today, I want to talk to you about dealing with irritating people. Oh yeah, by the way, in a few weeks, we will see the new member coming in here soon, so... We all know irritating people, right? It doesn't take too much to think about where irritating people are. You go to the store, there's irritating people. You go to work, there's irritating people. Even in between, when you're in the car, there's irritating people. Sometimes it's in the car, though, too, right? But oftentimes you see it's people dealing with anger their own way. You see it with road rage. I had a guy that... I don't know what it was. Maybe he didn't like my car or something like that. He just decided, I'm going to speed past this guy, and then I'm going to slow way down. And so I thought, okay, somebody's not having a good day today. So I passed him, and I went on my way, going normal speed, and everything comes by, just screaming by me again. I have no idea how fast he was going, but it seemed to be double the speed limit. And then he slowed way back down again. And this happened about 5 times. And finally, the last time, I don't know if he had to go a different way, but it was the last time, but he kind of gave me a symbol of his feelings towards me, really. And you just wonder, what do I do with that? Maybe in a bygone era, there was something called telemarketing, which happens about every time you decide to sit down to have dinner. They call, they want to sell you something, they want to take away your time with family, let your meal get cold because they have so much to say. Maybe that's where you find irritating people. Maybe another area is the ever-famous in-laws. Maybe it's your in-law parents. Maybe it's your in-law son or daughter-in-law. But there's irritating people all around. And maybe I want to ask this question here of this week. How many times have you used words like moron, idiot, stupid, dumb, to describe somebody? Relationships are so easy to break in our day and age. It doesn't take much, just a few misunderstood words to completely make someone want to shut you out of their life. And oftentimes it's because they don't understand what you're saying, really. And there's also the idea of fixing relationships is not easy. It's hard to fix a burned bridge. It's easy to burn a bridge, but it's hard to repair it, kind of because there's nothing to build on at that point. When Jesus starts off, he says, "You have heard it said, you shall not murder." Kind of the standard rule, don't kill anyone, right? Goes kind of without saying. Even in nature, if you were to see something die, you know that there's something not right about that happening. This is something you just don't do. You don't kill. Right? Kind of the Old Testament thing of thou shalt not kill, right? God gave that in the Ten Commandments. And we feel good. We feel accomplished when we're able to say, you know what? I've not killed anyone today. That's a good thing, right? And you've not killed anyone to this point in your life. I'm pretty sure everyone in this room hasn't yet. So, and likely, the end of today, no one in this room will have killed anyone still. We feel good about that, really. Perhaps we feel a bit too good on the, well, I've not killed anybody. And the thing is, Jesus doesn't end there. He says, but I say to you, anyone, some of them say everyone, inclusive, really, who is angry with his brother, I would say means anyone that you have a relationship with, anyone that you interact with, has something against you. All right. If you're angry with anyone, with your brother, you're in danger of judgment. We do well with don't kill anyone. But how are you doing about being angry with people? Is that an issue for pretty much everyone here at some point? There was a college professor, and he's a Bible professor, so it's kind of specific to understand how he's talking about this. But he had to teach this text to his class, and he's wondering, how in the world am I going to teach this lesson? And so the morning of class, he goes in, he sits in the back row next to one of his students, we'll just call him Joe, and says, how's your acting? What do you mean acting? He says, you mean like drama? Yeah, like drama. I'm doing all right. Well, I need you to do this with me here. I want you to let your phone go off. I'm going to make a big deal at the beginning of class of everyone turn off their cell phones. I'm going to make a big deal about it. And then once we get into the lecture, I want you to make your phone go off. And we're going to make the class think that you and I are going to get into this physical altercation. And so this Joe is not too sure about this. I don't know if people are going to believe it. And the professor says, don't overact. Okay? So he says, okay, I can do that. And so he starts class. He makes a big deal about turn off your cell phones. And then a few minutes into the lecture, Joe makes his cell phone go off. And it is just utter quiet, really. Looks up and there's just this sort of awkward laughter going through the class, really. And they notice it, really. Well, the professor, he slams his Bible shut, walks up right in front of the student's desk and say, what part of turning off your cell phone did you not understand? I use all one-syllable words. I know you're an athlete, but you still should be able to understand this. Everyone's silent. He folds his arm, or he says, I'm sorry, I didn't mean for that to happen. I tried to turn it off. It didn't work, apparently. I apologize. And so he turned it off. And the professor continued to rant at him and everything, and Joe folded his arms and said, do you have a problem with me? Or do you have a problem? And the teacher says, yeah, I have a problem with you. You're my problem. And the student says, okay, well, I'll fix that for you. And starts piling up his books to go. And he starts walking away, and the professor says, that next step better be towards me. So he stops, he turns around, gets right in the teacher's face. And you can hear a pin drop. And everyone, this 250 freshmen, all thinking that he's going to get in an altercation. He's got 10 teaching assistants that have no idea he was going to do this. And then all of a sudden, the teacher embraces the student and yells to his class, gotcha! And it's still quiet. You can hear crickets chirping, really, because they have no idea what's going on. And it takes him a good solid 5 minutes to get them to see the humor of what he just did, because they think this is a real deal. And kind of his point is, after he got them calmed down from laughing about it, is, okay, why did you so believe that we were going to get into a physical altercation? Why did you think we were going to get into a fight? Have I done something in the past 6 weeks to make you think that I'm going to take it to that level? And he said, let me tell you why you believed it so easily. And he said, because we are in such a crazy world. And isn't that the truth, really? We are so defensive, so easily angered in our world today. If somebody says something, does something that we don't like, we get on the defense real quick and things get out of hand real fast. So that when somebody goes off like that, it's so easy to believe that they are really just that angry. Because that's the world we live in. And he also went on to say, I travel a lot. I see a lot of Christians being a Bible professor. And I got to tell you, as a group, we're some of the meanest people I come in contact with, so easily angered. And if you were to ask me, the professor, why Christians are angry or what's the reason behind it, he would just say, yes. There's no rhyme or reason. There's no specific thing we're angry about. We just seem to be angry in general about stuff. And Jesus says, murder begins with anger. All our actions that we do start with a thought at some point. And Jesus is saying is, before you get to those points where you're emotions, your feelings, take action. Deal with those thoughts before they become so built up that it becomes an uncontrollable action of you want to take someone's life for some reason. So again, congratulations on not killing anyone, but how's your anger doing? Roberto Bolano wrote a book called 2666. It's a year in the future. It's a book about this 20 years of women, young women, being tortured, being abused, and being killed, being murdered, really. And it went on for 20 years in the book. And it's based on a real happening that happened in Mexico. This went on for 20 years, and they couldn't find out who it was. Well, in the book, there's these some detectives that are sitting in a bar. They're kind of taking a break from detective work, trying to figure out this case. And they're sitting around telling what is essentially blonde jokes. Specifically, women blonde jokes, really. And the point that Bolano is trying to make is these jokes and the murders that are coming, that are happening, have something to do with one another. It begins with the disrespect of women, and it ends with the murdering of them, the killing of them. And it's this mindset that it's okay because we start traveling down that path of degrading some group so that they are, in our minds, somewhat less than human. We struggle in our quest of helping people because who are being wronged, the women who are getting killed, getting murdered. And we're the ones trying to help them, but we're the ones telling the jokes. Or we're the ones degrading them in some other way, form or fashion, really. And this applies to different people that we struggle to help bring into know Jesus, really. And Jesus says the same thing in our text today. What ends in murder begins with the thoughts that you allow in your head. The thoughts that you start telling yourself, it's okay. Or it's not as big of a deal, really, right? Degrading thoughts of people being less than people. And we've kind of become experts in degrading people. We have sarcasm. We have jokes. We have different things like that of insults. We even have names for people who have this as a profession. We call them critics. We call them comedians. People who are paid to make fun of and degrade other people, making them seem not so important. Maybe even bringing them down to a level of subhuman, really. We know that it's easy to destroy relationships. That it's easier to destroy relationships than it is to restore them. And so to that we kind of think is, well, let's do the easier thing. It's easy to degrade. It's easy to tear things down. And that stuff of restoring, that's harder work. That's more effort than I want to put into it. So I don't really want to put the effort into it today. I'm just going to let things just go as they will, really. Begins with disrespecting. It begins with degrading. It begins with demeaning people, talking about them as if it's they are gone already before they ever die. Before they're ever sent to hell, we're saying is they're already in hell, so just give up on them, right? And Jesus here shows us a different way. Away from the insults, the sarcasm, the murderous thoughts, he shows us a way of reconciling, of building instead of destroying. And the point of the book that I just referenced, 2666, we make fun of people we don't know personally. There are things change whenever you put a face with something of a negative connotation in your mind. Specifically for us today, sin. It's easy to point and say to a sin and say, they have sin, they are doomed, really, right? It's easy to say, maybe a little too easy to say, really, that homosexuals are sinning. They're going to hell. Those who are addicted to lust, to pornography, they're going to hell. It's easy to see, look at politicians who have been corrupted and say, they're going to hell. Pick a sin, put in the blank, really, and it's easy for us to say, this sin, anyone who does this sin is going to hell. And in truth, you may be right about what the sin is And they may not change their ways before they pass on from this life or God returns, and God's going to say, you didn't do what I said to do. But I don't think we're doing our job if we simply leave it at that. Our job does entail noticing the sin, seeing the sin that's going on. And it also entails talking to them about it. And we do that. We do pretty good about that. That does mean we are truthful and say, this action is wrong. God says this is sin. But it's also our job to say things like, will you let me help you? And that's something we don't do too well at saying is, can I help you? I care about you. I may not know you so well, but I care about you and I want to help you to something better. If they say no, that's okay. You've done your part. They've kind of taken their fate into their own hands. And it's guided by the New Testament to say, move on to someone who says yes. And when someone says yes, you don't just say, well, you need to stop this, so stop it right now. We need to come to that place where we say, I'm going to walk with them. Okay? They know it's wrong. They know my point of view. But I need to walk with them and say, okay, this is wrong. We need to leave this behind. How are we going to do that? Walk beside them. Show them the example of how you live. Explore why they need to do this. What benefits come from it? And probably the hardest thing is they don't even know how to leave it behind. So exploring ways of letting it go to help leave behind the issues, the problems that need left behind. And if we don't do this, we do a huge disservice to God, to the job He has given to us, and we do such harm of pushing people away because we're not willing to help them. We say, you're doing this wrong, and they say, okay, what do I need to do about it? And we just say, get rid of it, or else you're going to hell. We degrade people by just leaving it that way, and we do a disservice to the job that God has given to us. And I think in this text today, the point is, go beyond not murdering. It's easy to not do something. And Jesus is saying is, okay, deal with the things of where it comes from. Anger develops in the mind and it leads to action. Having anger in the mind steals our ability to live and enjoy life the way it should be. It kind of blocks our way. You know, you think about it, I'm angry at this person. I want to try and avoid them at all costs, so I'm going to avoid places that we both like going, and you're stealing what joy you could have in this life of being where you like to be, helping the people you like to help, simply because you want to try and avoid it. You see how you can kind of steal away life from yourself, really, because you harbor that anger. Perhaps it's the story of the prodigals, of the reason why they are prodigals. They've gone away from God is because someone has said something that they misunderstood, made them angry, and they don't understand really what God is like because somebody from the church misrepresented how God would react because they took it on themselves to say, well, this is how I want to react. It's kind of that story of there's something that needs talked about. And talking about it is what would fix it. But for so long, they've gone away from it and not talked about what's bothering them. I think I've referenced this before, but there's a TV show called Scared Straight. It's about these kids that they're struggling with the law, even at such a young age as a minor. And so they take these kids who are probably going to end up in juvie or in prison later in life, really. And they take them in, they take them to the prison, and they have these guards that, or not guards, these prisoners that say, you know what, I have messed up and I regret it. I want to help these kids not to regret these mistakes that I've made. And so they bring them in and they give them this real life example of what it means to be put in prison. And the prisoners know not to hurt them, but they are doing their best to show them how scary prison life can be and how tough they really are not. Because you And what the kids typically look like when they come in is, oh, I'm cool. I'm going to be able to tell my kid or my friends that I was in prison for a bit and everything. And within the first 5 minutes, they are bawling their eyes out because they are so scared, because there's about a dozen to 20 guys or women in there, depending on who it is, all just in their face saying, I'm going to take advantage of you. I'm going to do all these different things, just scaring the daylights out of them. And kind of Jesus's point here is, he talks about it, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny. You don't know how hard it's going to be, how much you're going to have to pay until you're paying it, really. Until you get in prison, you don't know how difficult it's going to be. Kind of during this time when Jesus was giving this lesson, whenever you were found guilty and put in prison, they would put an amount to get out. It'd be bail bonds for us today, on the cell, okay? And the thing is, when you went to prison, you could pay that and get out of prison. But it's kind of hard when you're in prison. You can't go out and make money. And it's kind of just this mental thing of, I could go out and work and pay this off, but I can't even get out. And you kind of realize how dependent you are on someone else to come and take care of you. And that's kind of a point of Jesus, whenever he says, I paid the debt for you. It's kind of the same thing there. But Jesus's point is, get things fixed, really, because when you go to court, it's not always just in the court systems of this world, really. You may be innocent, but you may be found guilty, and then you're going to be in prison having to work your way out. Try and avoid that, because you may not get justice. But then let's come back to what Jesus says. Stay here, actually. He says, he talks about these unusual words in the text. He says, if you say to your brother, raka, you're in danger of judgment. And Jesus is basically saying, if you say to a person, you idiot, you raise the question of their intelligence, you bring a personal attack into the picture here. And then he says, if you say to a person, you fool, you're in danger of hell, fire, right? And unfortunately, actually, I kind of have to say, I can tell you accurately what translates from you fool. This is the literal words, but it has a very strong connotation of what we might call four-letter words. And it really is a use of profanity, and it's a bit astounding, a bit eye-opening to me that Jesus brings in these words. He uses them and say, don't say them because of that. He talks about these real issues of, you know, people out there saying very demeaning names to people, not so nice words being used to describe people. Words that cut to the very essence of who a person is. And Jesus is talking about those things in the Sermon on the Mount. But we don't deal with real issues. What we tend to do is talk about the weather. We talk about how's things going. But how many times do you find yourself talking about truth? Talking about what God says as truth, really. We do say one thing. We tend to say one thing and then do something that is completely conflicting with what we say we believe. We want God's will. This is one of the things we tend to say is, we want God's will, but I don't know what God's will is, right? That's a very difficult thing to distinguish, right? But I think we kind of leave that at just a very broad term. We do know his will, specifically in the area today. Deal with your anger. That's in God's will. He wants you to deal with the thoughts so that they don't become anger thoughts that lead you to actions of hurting people, or as he talks about today, killing someone. Do we know what it means, really? The question I really want to lay into today is, do you really line up with what God says about anger here? Do we really think that when it comes down to it, that when I'm just all pumped up because someone has upset me, that I really don't want to be angry? Are we really at that point where we want to remember at those times and say, God says to let go of my anger when I want to hold on to it most? Is that really a core belief for me? Is that really what I want to be about? Do I do it in my actions with my life? This is a little bit hard to talk about because it's so recent, really. At the hospital, they had us watch this video about shaking baby syndrome. And it's about 10 minutes long. The nurse said it's the worst video you'll ever watch, the hardest video to watch. I watch a lot of horror movies. I kind of laugh at them sometimes, really. This one takes the cake, really. And it really was hard for me because it said 75% of the people who do shake their children is a father figure. And it's kind of a self-indicting thing of, I'm in that percentage there. I'm a father figure. And I'm scared to death of that accidentally happening. Or the other part is people who are close to you. Often a best friend is another one of the guilty party that end up doing it. When we have anger issues, who is it at? For us today, whenever we have anger issues, is it typically the Christians, those who are at least supposedly and probably closest to us that we become angry with? And to be honest, do we see that line that connects thoughts, even angry thoughts, with leading to murdering someone, hurting someone? Do we really think it through on what we would do if we lived the way God asks us to with our anger issues? In the area of anger, do we really line up with what God says? That's what anger does. It tears people down, though. And it raises the question about someone's worth. And Jesus says, let me tell you how seriously I take this. He says, if you're on your way to worship and you remember that a brother or sister has something against you, this is so important that I want you to forget about coming to worship, and I want you to first go and be reconciled to your brother or sister before you even come to worship. That's just how important it is to God. Relationships are such an important part. Now, I do want to say that there is a thing of, this isn't a statement of never come back until it's fixed. It's a urgency of go right now and fix the problem. How many things in life do we put before coming to worship with God? This is one of the Bible things of this should be there. This is how important it is that we represent God accurately of fixing the problems when they arise, not just letting them go on. That's our relationship with God and with others needs to be ruled and governed by our love for God, and it makes it therefore important. Jesus says it's far more important than going to the temple or the church building for worship. Do we really think that? Is that really something that we say? What if we replaced our anger, our passion for anger, with a passion to reconcile? What would our life be like? What would our world be like if everyone did that? Can you imagine what the world would look like if everyone bought into, okay, I want to deal with my anger issues. I want to make things right as soon as I can because I want this to work. You know, you don't find many Christians who think, I think my relationships are more important than coming to worship today. I can't imagine going to services while I have unreconciled relationships out there. We don't honestly think like that, but my thought today is maybe we should. Jesus continually goes back to the cycle of talking about violence and revenge, trying to get back one another, one-upping one another for the wrong that they've done us. And over again, he talks about cutting off things ultimately that lead to bad things. If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off. Now, I do think this is figurative, but I think it does mean that if something is leading you to sin against God, do what God says not to do, then get it out of your life. Even something as important as your hand. Okay, this might be in the area of the things you might say, I can't imagine this not being in my life sort of importance here that he's talking about. And I hope you know I mean nothing life-threatening, but I do mean life-altering, life-changing. Something that is so important to you, but it's leading you into sin, you do indeed need to let it go. The way to prevent murder, war, violence, the way to prevent tribalism, or more commonly called cliques. It's by cutting it off at the root, cutting it off at the base, really. Congratulations on not killing anyone, but how's your anger doing? Maybe we bring this into the equation, talking bad about people, trash talking. There's areas where it's kind of enjoyable and not such a sinful thing, like sports and everything. It's fun to do that. But with that, we kind of talk about it being okay, and then we start to walk into areas where it's not so okay, of degrading someone else as a actual, you're not worth the body parts you're made of, really. We feel freer with different things in today's world, really, of it's okay to degrade somebody because we don't think about what it is. We oftentimes go off on rants, and it's good to talk about what's right. But whenever we talk about rants on social media, we tend to go to the area of, I don't normally post like this, but I can't help myself. And I can't help but think that's just a statement to kind of get yourself, let yourself feel that you're off the hook. We talk about they shouldn't be able to reproduce. They shouldn't be able to live. We should have them killed because they're just such horrible people. Instead of thinking about they're someone that God created and that God died for so that they even have the chance to love him. And we kind of just degrade them to say, you know what, they're so sinful, just forget about them, God. I don't want them. But Jesus makes it clear that trash talk is serious business. He says there are ways to talk about people that aren't playful but are in fact just hurtful. And that's not the way his followers are to be. They're to be engaged. They're to be helping people. And Jesus says, relationships trumps worship. Something so important to us we talk about. We need to be here. We need to praise our God. And God's saying is, to get your attention, this is more important. So important. Not to degrade worship, but I want you to see the importance of it. And it's this thought of, I want you to go fix them right now. And so you think about it. Why does God want this to be so important? What good does it do? You think about it. This is the way God envisioned his world being, a way of unity, of people getting along. That's what he tries to show us heaven's going to be like. And this is one manifestation of it, one showing of he wants it to be that way. But everyone needs to want it to happen too, to make it a reality. There's a movie not many people are familiar with called Forgiving Dr. Mengele. It's a movie about a Jewish woman who was a victim of Dr. Mengele's experiments during the Holocaust. And the doctor had been dead for a very long time at this point, and she decided that she wanted to forgive him because until she did, she was being held back from life that she could enjoy, letting her fear and her anger and resentment towards him control her life. And so she decided she wanted to forgive him. And it's amazing how much opposition people brought to her. How can you possibly want to forgive him? That it was just unthinkable she'd even think of that. But she knew the power of forgiveness. And there's someone out there with whom you need to be reconciled with. And until you practice this reconciliation, the power of forgiveness is not really fully realized in you, in your life, really. Trash talk is easy. It's kind of a cop-out almost, really, of taking the easy way out. It's easy to tear down. The mark of a real person, God says, is one who can travel the hard road of restoring the problem areas, of restoring relationships. So with Jesus, it's not about murder. It's about dealing with the murderous thoughts. That's not the way the world is, but it's not even an ideal world that's fake and everything, that this could be a reality if we catch sight of it. We as God's people need to help lead the way, to lead by example of this is how we deal with anger and this is the way that it should be because this is how God designed us to be and what he says is good for us. So who needs to restore a relationship today? Think about it, the people in your life. Is there someone that you need to make things right with? Maybe it's someone. That someone is God you need to make things right with. You have the opportunity now while you're still living. You have the opportunity. You don't know when life is going to end. Make things right with people. Make things right with God. And if you need to be baptized for the first time, to be a part of God's relationship, we can do that too. If you have these needs, please come tell me during this next song as we stand and as we sing.